It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Donnie, you're out of your element!
Turn your mic down so we can hear you. Music.
Hello there, film lovers. I'll get to you.
I'm going to get to you.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soze. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes in California. And we have a blog, which we will hopefully be more active once the pledge drive is over in about an hour. You can check out the blog at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard, yo, check this out. My main man and host of the Cool Down.
That's down.
That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello.
And you were saying, we are, what, less than an hour?
I count 58 minutes and 10 seconds.
For the pledge drive, not this show. Well, I mean, check the show. Yeah.
But if you're listening on Sunday, then no, it's past. It's
Over. You can hear us on Sundays at 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
And don't be surprised, somewhere down the road, if you hear a whole new show on Sunday at 4. And if you do,
what'll happen?
Email me at msocey@wfyi.org and make a note telling us you heard the new show live. And WFYI, okay, Kobe and me, we will give you a prize package worth lots of cool things.
Yeah.
So did we meet our goal? Did we make it?
Yes, we made the goal around 4 o'clock. Yes, but we are still looking for new members. The way you become a new member today is by calling 1-800-233-0020. Of course, you can give online year-round at WFYI.org.
Anybody print that lie you requested last week?
I don't know. I didn't look, but I was thinking about it. I feel like, I mean, the drive's still going on right now, so...
Oh, so somebody still wants it?
If they still want it, we could extend it, but I was thinking...
Forever?
You could say, you could pick your statement, either Kobe Slagle is cooler than Matt Soze, or Matt Soze is cooler than Kobe Slagle, and then whichever person is the subject of that comment...
The other
of
one?
Why you give, the other one has to buy.
I see. Yes. So, if you are named Bianca or Lynn or Emma, you cannot. You're disqualified. Even if it's Bianca Johnson, sorry, you're not. You can't do it. Lynn Jackson. No, afraid not. Emma Stone. Those doors always open. So, Gypsy Kings are.
Oh, they got.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
There we go.
Oh, I put a fade on there. That's good.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Although you cut out the solo, it's kind of.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Gypsy Kings are cool to see, but when you see them, you realize, I mean, the Gypsy Kings really are the one guy singing and the one solo guy, and then 5-6 other guitar players behind him that are there for...
I wish we had that many guitar players in the studio.
The Film Sociology guitar players!
Hey, I'm also working on the Blues House Party dancers, but that's...
Oh.
That's neither here nor there. So, okay, we have lots. We have, another chat with Chef Robert Irvine.
Yes. I'm excited to hear this because I want to hear what he said about...
you and your food.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we also have a repeat. This was one of the first big interviews we had at Film Sociology. And I'm playing it again because Diane Rehm spoke to this actor on Monday. So we're going to play my interview with F. Murray Abraham in a little bit. But first, I want to kind of, I don't mean to plow through these, but we have a show that's just chock full of public radio film sociology goodness. We get some new films opening up today. Of course, Alex Cross, where it's not Morgan Freeman, it's Tyler Perry playing Alex Cross. And We also have Holy Motors opening, Nobody Walks, Paranormal Activity 4.
I was surprised that there was four of these already. Have they done one each year for the last 3 years?
It's kind of like Saw, where they do one every year. And how many of those?
I guess I just didn't realize that it had been going on for
That's because you've
now,
seen how many
years.
Of these, Kobe?
I've not seen any of them.
So
and
you're
0
for 4.
As such.
They
yes.
remain as such. So Tai Chi 0, that's what she said the first time. I'm just reading the titles, dude. The Girl, which is the one with Sienna Miller and Toby Jones, this relationship between Alfred Hitchcock and Tippi Hedren. Hello, Tippi.
Really?
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
So, but I want to start with a documentary called The Other Dream Team. No, this is not about LeBron. This is about the Lithuanian basketball team, 1992 Olympic team from Lithuania. And here's some audio. What did I just say?
What the heck is it?
I said the film title. Oh, is it in trailers?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. Hi, folks.
We're
setting up for things here. Oh, by the way, also opening yesterday was the Heartland Film Festival.
Yes.
Which is running through October 27th. You can go to heartlandfilmfestival.org for dates and times. Thank you to everybody who came out to the restaurant at the oh my goodness, I just had a freeze.
Canterbury.
At the Canterbury. Look Gonna have that. Tea there sometime. You're on it. So we had chats yesterday and this afternoon. And okay, we'll talk about Heartland a little bit. Here is the other dream team.
Imagine having to compete for another country, knowing that since 1940, the Russians have occupied and destroyed every bit of hope.
Lithuania's push toward freedom was as essential as the push against the Berlin Wall.
The independence flag is flying all over Lithuania.
The 1992 opening ceremony at Barcelona is one of the cosmic turning points of the 20th century. If you were one of those rare Americans put off by the whole dream team ethic, then it was an easy choice who you were going to root for.
All of a sudden, Lithuania is sitting there with their independence, a nation that's completely bankrupt. One of the local beat writers over the Bay Area wrote a little story that was read by the Grateful Dead.
The Grateful Dead were big basketball fans.
Jerry's like, we're all about freedom and celebration. Basically, we want to help you guys. They cut us a big check and sent a box of tie-dye t-shirts with Lithuanian colors. So that's the way we entered the Olympics.
To finally be free and to be able to see your own flag raised at moments of triumph.
Their final game against Russia, live or die.
The whole nation was watching. You know, you have to destroy them. At any cost, you have to win.
It was national pride, something what we dreamed.
You're involved with something that's bigger than just sports, bigger than just rock and roll.
Freedom. Let's go.
In Lithuania, it was a different kind of dream. It was the dream of a nation.
Well, we seem to be in sports documentary mode between the return of ESPN 30 for 30, which I'm always happy about, and we got this film also opening. It could have a truly moving picture seal if it wanted, or if they would give it to them. Anyway, this is obviously much more than just the Lithuanian basketball team making it to the Olympics.
It was unbelievable!
Yes, it was. But yeah, the stories of being under Russian occupation and having to play for that country. And I think for a lot of people, this was the first signs of international play coming into the NBA with some of these players.
I don't know about that.
But you mean before? Who was before? Well, I'm sure there were, but I think from a global standpoint, also the fact that with the first dream team, they're not amateurs. So, but anyway, it's an inspiring story, obviously, between being able to get under out from the shadow of the Russians, and then later playing the Russians. Yes, them wanting their pictures taken with Michael Jordan after they got trounced in the Olympics. There was that side note. But between that and the odd out-of-nowhere collaboration with or help support from the Grateful Dead and the tie-dye shirts, and, of course, anytime we hear Bill Walton talking, got to get Bill Walton on the show. Someday. Someday, maybe.
Yeah.
But no, it's there's many different facets going on. It's not just basketball, you know. So you don't have to be a basketball fan to appreciate this film. But it is pretty inspiring, and especially with Heartland opening this weekend. If you're not at the theaters for Heartland, you can go check this film out over at Landmark. It's worth checking.
Now that was a good movie.
Okay, so and of course Heartland had their big opening last night with High Ground. With Don Hahn, one of the producers who did Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid. But there are plenty of films to choose from, and I'll go through some of these a little bit later on in the show. But I want to talk slowly so Kobe will be ready to set up the next piece. one of our regular correspondents, he's not even a correspondent, I haven't actually told him this yet, but Chef Robert Irvine, who's been on the show many, many times.
Regular contributor.
He is a regular contributor. I don't think we gave him the title because we don't want
to... Film Sociology Food Department.
We don't want to pay him. Yeah, we have a news department and
he's the director
sports
of the food
department. Oh, boy, those are intense meetings. But anyway, he's got
He tells me everything I'm doing wrong.
You personally?
As a person and things I cook and...
Right.
Yes.
No, he's not going to say. He was... Because you know, Bianca's right. You're wrong. As well as should be. So, all right. So, anyway, he's got a new thing. Of course, he's with Chefville, which we'll talk about in a little bit. He also talks about a restaurant impossible. By the way, we have an exclusive with this interview. I don't want to give it too much away. And, yeah, and Gail's nearby, but I didn't talk to her. So, anyway, here is...
save that for another film.
Yeah, I am saving for another film. So, here's my chat with Chef Robert Irvine. Joining me on Film Sociology, one of my regular guests, and you're going to see him not just in a whole new light, but in a whole new dimension, Chef Robert Irvine. How are you, Robert?
What's up? How are you?
All right, pretty good. How was New York? I know you were there for the Food and Wine Festival.
It was great. It was great. Got to see some old friends, meet some new friends. Marmoto and I were doing a little singing and dancing, karaoke style, dancing queen, and... like a virgin from Madonna, and it was kind of funny.
So I guess Pierce Brosnan has nothing to worry about when it comes to singing.
Absolutely.
Now, I got to let you know, my producer on this on the film show, Kobe, and his better half, Fair Sweet Bianca, she made your potato leek soup last weekend, and it went over like gangbusters.
Tell him it's one of my favorite of all time soups.
Good. I will definitely do that. So, as I said before, I thought you should be the star of Under Siege because you are a butt cook and naval chef. But now apparently you need to be in a remake of Tron because you're involved with Chefville. Tell us all about it.
Well, Chefville was a great opportunity for me. I had the people from Zynga come out to the live show, you know, the Restaurant Impossible, and they took pictures and just watched the show as it went on. And you know, 3 weeks later, came back with this amazing life character. And the only difference between the real character, Robert Irvine, and the Chefville character was the color of the sledgehammer. They put red, and, you know, in the real world of Robert Irvine is gold, so I made them change that. You know, the show's influence over the game, Chefville, was huge. You know, now you can go online and you can build your own restaurant, put it any way you are, want it, knock walls down, create your own style food. So it's fun.
So have you played it yet?
I have played it, yes.
And how does your restaurant, does it look like a lot like one of your own places?
No, it doesn't. I went, you know, I never want to make my places look like mine. I wanted to have fun with it. So it's kind of goofy.
Give us an example.
The wall colors and the floor colors are very red. I do crepes. nothing like I would do normally.
Now, is there an animated Tanya and Tom that you can give headaches to?
No, unfortunately there isn't. Just me screaming at the screen, you know. The fun part about Tom and Tanya and Cheryl and Lynn is that they're so used to me, and in real life, I don't think they'd want an avatar version of them out there.
So I would say, have the ladies in your house played the game as well?
They haven't. They've been on the road. You know, the trouble with being on the road as much as I'm on the road, the girls get a chance to travel with me and Gail. And Gail's with me a lot of the time. So they run off and do girl things, lady things, shopping, working out, that sort of stuff. And then we eat and then we sleep. So there's not much time to do the game things. I can only play it when I'm on my own on the road.
I see. Now, has Gail had an animated cartoon or game figure already with her line of work?
They're working on I'm getting told. Sorry, what was your video game? Oh, yeah, she was on a video game. She's just screaming at me here. WWE, she was herself in that game, right? And now she's got an action figure being made of her right now from TNA. So, she's used to this fame.
Well, I think you guys could create Weddingville now.
We could. Matt says we should have Weddingville. Matt said we should have Weddingville. He said, "Oh yeah, let's have Weddingville."
There you go. Your pledge dollars at work right there. So
there you go.
So you're in Arizona, getting ready for another taping.
We are getting ready to do a new show tomorrow. Another Restaurant Impossible. And arrived yesterday. Got a little downtime. Slept. Went to watch that great movie last night. Argo. I got to tell you, wow.
Yeah?
I got to tell you, I didn't go in with expectations, but I know of the story. So watching the movie, and again, I like that suspense, action type stuff. So there at the end, I was gripping Gail's hand like, oh, they got to make it. So I really enjoyed the movie.
I think it's a lot like Apollo 13, in which, yeah, you know the outcome, but you're still caught up in the story.
Yeah, and the story is such a huge one. And if you stay, and I would suggest that people stay till the credits are done and watch a little bit at the end, because there's some great information there. To know that it's not that long ago, pretty cool story.
So was it your choice or was it Gail's pick? And then whose turn is next?
It was either Argo or, what was the other one, Gail? Argo or Pitch Perfect. So Pitch Perfect is next.
Okay.
You know, I go with chick flicks. I'm a guy who likes to go to watch movies with Gail, as you know.
Of course.
We travel a lot, so us going to the movie, we normally do two movies a night, but we were so tired yesterday. We watched Argo, and so it depends. Looking maybe to watch that. Also, what's the remake of Red Dawn? So I think that's going to be kind of an interesting one, too. Mm-hmm. And I see now the Denzel Washington one being advertised. I'm kind of interested in that, too. Lots of good movies coming out.
Yeah, it's grown-up movie season between now and the end of the year. A lot of stuff that's looking for awards, but stuff that's a little more for an older set as opposed to the bang-em-up stuff from the summer.
Yeah, are you trying to say that I'm old? I just want to know.
Seasoned, sir. Seasoned.
Good one. Good recovery, Matt. I'm seasoned, not old.
I'm just as seasoned as you are. So
yeah.
They don't make they hardly make movies for my age.
Yeah, it's all fun.
So how many more restaurants do you hit before you take a break?
Well, we go all the way up until the 29th of December. We take a break from the 16th through Christmas, and the 29th we come back again. Restaurant Impossible has just been, you're the first person to know, actually, so, and I mean that. We just got picked up for another 26 episodes.
Congratulations.
And you are the first one. It's been exclusive. very excited about that. That's a whole another year of filming, so the Robert Irvine live shows are doing excellent, you know.
Yeah,
the country.
You should have concert tour shirts like the rock bands do.
Well, this has turned into that. You know, we're doing another 20 live shows between now and Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And then next year looks like we'll do somewhere in the region of 60 to 80. And it's funny because you're on the insert on the beginning of this whole thing at Butler University there. And here we are now. We've refined it. We keep refining it. And the show changes per location. So it's never the same show twice. The body is there, but it changes. And it's just becoming this great, great show. And there you were. You were at the beginning of that way back when.
Yes. Don't make me do push-ups again. That was sad.
It was funny.
Yes, it's funny. It's funny. No, it was funny then, too. So.
And the beautiful thing about this is we're giving back to the Wounded Warriors and Gary Sinise Foundation, which has been my life's work for the military, and to hook up with Gary this weekend. So sorry, the 20th of this month, which is next weekend, we do a big function. Gary Sinise, Lieutenant Dan Band, plays at the Naval Hospital in San Diego, and I feed 2,000 patients. So to say thank you to them. So that's going to be kind of a great, great sort of gig.
So yeah, we'll still work on the chef spy script sometime.
I said I was with NBC a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like, I want to do a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to pay me. I just want to do one and say I've done one.
Don't say that. Say you're dying to do one, but get the check. And of course, Gail can be Mrs. Peel if you're a fan of the Avengers.
Somebody said to me, "Oh, you look just like Daniel Craig." I'm like, "What? Do you need glasses?"
Nothing wrong with wearing glasses.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, rose-colored glasses.
Oh!
Yeah.
I could be one of the 19 or 20 Felix Leiters in the James Bond series.
Yeah, I mean, if you think 50 years, only 6 Bonds, that's pretty good record.
Not bad at all. Not bad at all.
And to think that he didn't want to, that Daniel Craig didn't want to do this movie because he thought it would typecast him too much.
It's interesting when you think about the films that the Bond actors were doing, and then you think of the stuff that they were doing when they weren't doing Bond films. You know, Sean Connery was working with Sidney Lumet, Roger Moore was doing spy movies in Europe, and Daniel Craig's done a few non-Bond films that are quite good. So
yeah, no, what was that one he did? Again, and I went to watch it. Daniel Craig, what was that with a girl? Oh, my word.
The Invasion, Dreamhouse.
No. Girl with a Dragon.
Oh, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Yes, yes, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good movie, too.
Yeah, you know, we wish all disgraced journalists look like Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
They look like me.
Listen, you look great, so get over it.
I know.
More push-ups. That's all.
Yes, thank you. Just sometimes I just don't have you behind me for the extra motivation.
Yeah. Well, Gail is my motivation. She's the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. So.
Well, great. The next time.
And my two girls, obviously.
Well, the next time I do push-ups on stage, have Gail do what you did, all right?
I'll have Gail shout at you.
Yeah. Wait, if you listen carefully, you can hear my wife laughing her head off right now. So. All right, Robert, I'll let you and Gail get back to Arizona.
Listen, I appreciate you chasing me and being patient. It's been kind of a crazy, I got to say, I haven't been home in 9 weeks almost. So
That's the biz.
So. It's crazy, but now, it's a good crazy. So.
Of course, and I always appreciate you being one of the regulars on my program.
Well,
as soon as I find Gail's film, I'll let you both know.
Oh, yes, that would be awesome.
I'm still on the hunt.
I want her to talk to you about it.
All right, most definitely.
This is TNA Knockout Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
So there you have it. My recent chat with Robert Irvine, and I have permission to talk to his lovely wife, Gail. And he liked your suit. He liked the fact that you made his suit. Fair Sweet Bianca made the suit. Yeah, so it's fun to have this show. All right. We're going to move on a little bit. Cause some of the titles we're checking out at Heartland Film Festival, we have a documentary called Nothing Like Chocolate, which is about an independent chocolate company in Grenada, of all places, and talks a little bit about how chocolate is made, as well as some of the politics behind making chocolate and gathering the beans. And let's put it this way, a certain corporation not available for comment when it comes to that subject. You also have Kara's Piece, which was one of the better films I got to see this year at Heartland, which is about a stage actress who, because of brain tumors, lost most of her short-term memory. And in the film, we would see her working on a one-woman show. So that's there as well. So I got a couple more titles I'll hit you with in a little bit. But on Monday, on the Diane Rehm Show, which you can hear on HD1, she had a chat with Academy Award-winning actor F. Murray Abraham. Of course, he won an Oscar for Amadeus, playing Saudi Eddie. And a couple things happened. It inspired me to show Emma the DVD, which she really, really enjoyed.
Who does not like that movie?
People who hate cinema,
yep.
Really. So you know who you are. But
I hate everything.
That's right. And this is coming from the guy with the Haterade mug saying, you hate cinema. But so anyway, he just recently received an award for the Shakespeare Company for his work. He did this in Washington, D.C. But several years ago, after I think the first season of Film Sociology, I got to talk to Murray. He lets me call him Murray, because he was doing a gig in town with the ISO. He was doing some dramatic readings with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. Oh, by the way, they're back at work and all as well. But so we're going to go back to a couple of years ago to my chat with Academy Award-winning actor and movie buff and really nice guy, F. Murray Abraham.
Well, what's on your mind?
Well, first off, I guess I should – how should I address you?
Your Majesty.
My liege, I was thinking, but –
my name is I'm half Syrian, half Italian, and it's hard to please both sides of the family. So my father's name is Frederick, and my name is Frederick, but I decided to use an F because the Syrians call me Farid and the Italians call me Federico. So with the F, I pleased everybody.
All right, so F. Murray.
That's fine. Murray is just dandy.
Murray, okay.
And how do I call you?
Matthew.
Okay, Matthew.
And so obviously you played a lot of Wasp, obviously, with your background.
I played a lot of Wasp. Yeah, I don't think I ever played a Wasp in my life.
How did you get hooked up with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra?
I've been doing this for years, all over the world.
This particular piece?
And I think that this particular piece, you know what we're doing, right? The Copland piece?
Lincoln's Portrait.
Yeah, it's just, it's very meaningful to me. And the first time I ever did it was here in town with the New York Philharmonic. And I was carried away. I really was very moved by that, by those words. And I had done some studying. I had played a Lincoln once, believe it or not, speaking of Wasps.
A Continental?
A Continental Lincoln? No. You know, that was a great-looking car.
Yes, it was.
It was a wonderful car at one time.
Back when cars were a piece of art.
Well, yeah, you're talking to a car fiend. I agree with you. When you could, we could spot cars by the sound of their mufflers. They were that individual. I don't know if you know that.
I grew up in an automotive town up in Michigan, so yeah, I remember those days.
Where were you, around Flint?
Yes, I grew up in Flint. Got out with all my fingers.
Yeah, well, my people were steel workers in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
We made the steel. I don't know. You have your own steel mills in Indiana. I know that.
Well, not really. Gary's a wasteland nowadays.
Well, have you been to Flint lately?
Yes.
I mean, it's really too bad. It's a depressing thing. A friend of mine who lives there, when I did a concert in Detroit, it was one of these concerts. Only this was an interesting concept. A concert. It was I'm trying to think. It was, you know Stravinsky's Story of a Soldier.
Yes.
Rather, his music for it.
Right.
Well, Vonnegut has written an adaptation. He said that the original story has nothing to do with reality. He said the music does, the discordant, the wonderful, driving, strange, and absolutely brilliantly original music. I worship Stravinsky. This is a tough piece of literature and writing. He hated war, Vonnegut did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extraordinary. I don't know why it's not done more often instead of the original. But I was doing it in Michigan, and a friend of mine took me out for a ride out by the lake to have a nice fish dinner. And I saw all those beautiful mansions, all for sale.
Yeah. Now, how often do you get to do pieces like this with symphonies?
Well, it's whenever I get calls, and if I'm not making a flick, if I'm not doing a play, I jump at the chance because I don't know how to explain it. If you have a chance to be on the stage with an orchestra, you have to do it. You have to arrange it with, if you have any pull anywhere, just to be on the stage with them while they're working out.
Now, is this a piece where it's in between the songs, or they're playing under you as you're reading?
It's going to be between and during.
Ooh.
It's just thrilling.
That's got to be a rush.
Oh, I can't begin to tell you. And I've worked with some of the greatest in the world. And it's thrilling. I mean, really thrilling. It's like a different kind of a thrill because it's not an intellectual activity. It's far beyond it's really deeply, it's visceral, but at the same time, it's transporting. It's transcending. Great.
Well, it's interesting because when you do a film, unless the director pumps music onto the set during a shot, I mean, that's one thing. But to be able to have, I mean, you the soundtrack is behind you.
Yeah, the only problem with it, I mean, the danger, not the problem, is that if you miss your cue, you're in trouble because the orchestra doesn't try to vamp and catch up. It's hard to do with 90 pieces,
it's,
you know.
It's not a jazz combo.
It's great. It's also a completion of sorts in terms of an actor, because there are things that an actor in the classical works, for example, any Shakespeare, any musical piece of work, Moliere, for example, or even some of the beautiful music that's in Tennessee Williams, you're never going to be able to achieve what music achieves. You try to, vocally and also spiritually, but you can't accomplish what Mozart does. It's just a different thing. But the idea that you can combine them, it's a kind of a gift, I must tell you. It's like a little present. And the whole thing is, I'm sure, because I did that movie so many years ago, Amadeus.
25.
I mean, can you imagine? That thing is still alive. People still love it.
Yes, I can, actually. I was 14 when that film came out. I remember being the youngest one in the theater by about 30 years. And think, not only did this film introduce me to and open my mind to classical music, but I went, wow, who is this guy? You know, the guy from Animal House is great, but who's him? Who is he? And that was, for a lot of people, that was the world introduction to F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah, it was a treat. It was a gift. The problem is, of course, it's not being able to do another one like it, you know?
No Amadeus 2. The final years.
Well, my son said that there should be a sequel where Amadeus is where Mozart's son grows up and wants revenge. He wants to call it Amadambo. Anyway,
don't give Michael Bay any ideas. Now, when you filmed that, did you do the young Salieri first or the old one first?
The old one. I did all the old stuff first. We did it in 3 weeks.
Wow. How much time on the chair for makeup?
4 hours, 4.5 hours each morning.
Were you able to sleep?
Well, I was pretty intense. I don't know how to tell you. I'm a pretty intense actor anyhow, but I was completely dedicated to that, and I lived alone when I was in Prague to be away from the company. And it was all completely focused. I think the biggest mistake I made, if you can call it a mistake, is expecting to, from that point, do that kind of work for the rest of my life in film. That's kind of naive.
Well, what was the silliest script you got after winning the Oscar?
Oh, gee, there were so many that I refused. I should have done them just for the money, if not anything else. But they were just silly. They made me out to be a villain. I don't think Salieri is a villain. Well, I think he's just a real human being.
Well, Carl Malden said bad guys don't wake up thinking they're bad guys. They got a job to do.
That good old Carl Malden. I just saw One Eyed Jacks not long ago. He was
good in that. Yeah, I just watched Baby Doll. Not a film to watch with your wife, but
that's another good performance. Was that Kazan?
Yes. It's funny you mentioned intensity. My daughter, she's 7, and she said you were intense in Muppets from Space.
Isn't that great?
She's like, you're talking to him? I went, yes, that's part of Daddy's job,
oh,
believe it or not.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
That's so flattering. Isn't that a great age?
Yeah. She's. It's funny. My wife is an actress, and any role that my wife plays, my daughter wants to play. So she refers to herself as Baby Gertrude and Baby Parthy. And last year, Lynn got to do Lear, and Emma said, I'm Baby Goneril. And we went, no, you're not. No, no, no. That's wrong, and on so many levels.
Medea.
Yeah, don't give her any. I directed that, but she doesn't remember, thank God.
You're an actor.
I try. My wife is equity. I'm independent. And if it's a choice between my wife's guaranteed equity money and or my vanity projects, I let the missus work.
Works the work. So. I mean, you can see that for some of the films I've done. I mean, after a while, you think, well, I'm not going to wait anymore for a good film. I've got to make the rent.
Well, even
after a while, you think, oh, God, do I have to do this? And you do.
But I think even films that maybe there's not high-profile roles, but when I see you in something like Insurrection and Surviving the Game, I'm like, well, he's going to be fine. He knows what he's doing.
Well, I love the idea of people asking me, like, well, why are you doing those movies? Well, that's kind of a dumb question. You do what you have to do. But if they asked me to do other films, I would do them. But it seems to me that my life is really revolves around the theater here in New York, and I do films when I have a break from the theater.
As opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, but it's a nice life. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those. I love Shakespeare, and you can't live on Shakespeare, not in New York anyway. I don't think you can anywhere. I mean, I don't think they pay very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it after Amadeus that you wound up doing a lot more classical theater?
Well, yeah, I was doing it before, but afterwards it was amazing how it kind of guarantees your work life. It's hard to believe. I mean, I'm a good actor, but there are a lot of good actors around. You know, mm-hmm. you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not selling myself short, but you know what I'm talking about. You got to have some luck in this business.
Sure.
And I've had some luck, but ever since I won the Academy Award, I've been working practically every day. It's just been wonderful stuff off Broadway, experimental stuff with Richard Foreman and. Tom O'Horgan and gosh, I guess everybody in town. I really had a great time.
You
and
still do.
I'm going to continue having a great time.
Well, it seems like it's been, from an artist standpoint, to be able to do stage and screen and voiceover and narration. So you're not stuck in a rut. You're not stuck doing a soap or a sitcom for years and years and years.
Yeah, it's the best.
And one of the things that's always was cool for me, especially after seeing Amadeus, is you were one of those guys. And when I saw your earlier work, I'm like, oh my! I was a caffeinated 15-year-old, so I'm like, oh, it's the Amadeus dude in Scarface and Serpico and the Sunshine Boys. It was one of those. I have to go back, and this is before the internet. I'm like, I have to go back and find out what else this guy has done to lead up to this.
Oh, you got to take a look at the Ritz.
Yes, I saw the Ritz at too young of an age. I should revisit it again now that I'm more semi-mature.
Well, it works better on the stage, I think, but it's not a bad picture. Reed is great.
Yes, and I especially liked your work in Mighty Aphrodite.
Oh, thanks. That was fun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you couldn't have seen any of my stage work, though, because I...
Well, you're still doing some stage work, right? I just need to go east.
I've been doing Ethan Coen's plays. Those are pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know anything about them.
What are some of the plays?
Well, he's written 6 plays, and I've been in 4 of them.
So you're one of the community players.
They're 6 one-acts, short pieces, and it seems like we've got a hookup, and it's great because they're funny and they're brief. What did Chekhov call his one-act plays? Vaudevilles? That's kind of what these are.
Right. Now, did I see you just completed a picture of Barbarossa?
Yeah, it should be coming out next month.
This isn't a remake of the Gary Busey, Willie Nelson Western, right? This is completely different?
Gosh, I didn't know about that.
1982.
No, I don't know that picture. I know Gary. We worked together.
Mm-hmm.
In Surviving the Game.
Yes.
We really had a good time, he and I. I mean, you've heard stories about him, and I...
Yeah, we've seen him on TV, yeah.
I didn't see any of that stuff. I mean, we had a great time. We became quite close.
I mean, the guy doesn't get an Academy Award nomination for nothing.
That was a wonderful performance.
Yes. What is this Barbarossa about?
It's a historic character who actually tried to unify Italy, but under his command, Barbarossa came in from the north and tried to take it over. And it's this heroic story of a stand that these farmers made against this brilliant and great general, and these Italian farmers won. It's a historically in Italy, it was a great moment in their history.
And you shot it in Italy?
Yes, I do a lot of in Romania and Italy. I do a lot of work with the Italians. I've been doing it for ever since before Amadeus, actually. It's kind of my second home.
And you got the...
this picture I'm doing now is part Italian. It's Italian and Canadian financed.
This one is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The one I'm working on. Oh. And Barbarossa was strictly Italian.
Oh, I see.
And that was the 5th film I made with that director. And I'm going to make another one with him next year in Italy and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That, too, is a co-production between Canada and Italy. Don't ask me the connection. There it is.
It's all right. I remember going, my family and I went to Stratford, and there was the Canadian Chinese restaurant. Whatever it takes. What's the picture you're working on now?
This is Giancarlo Giannini, and I are old friends.
Ah.
He wrote this script for us, and he's starring in it and directing it as well. And we're shooting it just outside of Toronto. I'm in town for only about 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
I had a break, and I came here to be with the family. But we're shooting up there, and then when we finish up in Toronto, we'll go back to Rome and finish up there.
I
should be done with the picture on the end of October.
What's the title?
It's several titles. It feels a little like Woody Allen, the X Project.
Or untitled Woody.
It's called Looking in Obituaries.
Yeah, it's going to be renamed in the States.
It's a good script. He did well. He wrote it, too.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's an inventor, too, by the way. Anyway.
What did he invent?
He is an electronic genius.
Really?
He does inventions for his own house, for his own sound system. And it's a remarkable man. He really is, aside from being a remarkable ladies' man. They just fall over their feet when they see him. He's had a wonderful career. His work with Lena was just sensational.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Rick Mueller.
Yes.
I worked with her on a picture that she wrote.
What was the picture?
It was called, let's see, Enough About Romance, Now Let's Have Some Sausages. I mean, that's what she writes. But it was, my co-star was Sophia Loren.
Uh-huh.
And she played my wife, Lover, and I got to kiss her a lot of times.
Wow. You wish Kubrick was directing that day.
Yeah.
Take 130.
I don't know if I understand Kubrick's last flick. I was very disappointed, and I'm a real big fan.
Eyes Wide Shut? I was with it until the third Last Warning.
I just thought this is becoming predictable and dull. And he's never dull.
No.
I mean, his early stuff is still great. The Killing is still
love The Killing. It's so funny when people, I show that to people, and I think they're used to the wide, huge, you know, almost bleak scope of something like The Shining in 2001, but The Killing is so good.
Yeah.
Great heist film. Now you got me thinking of Sterling Hayden, and I'm interviewing you.
Sterling Hayden, wow. Continues to churn it out, doesn't he? Mm,
always timeless work. It was funny,
have you seen my wife discovered it recently, the original upon which, speaking of Sterling Hayden, Airplane was based?
In
The Zone, or what was it?
I thought there were a couple.
Zero Hour,
yes.
Have you seen it?
Not in a long time.
Oh, man, it's so funny.
So the Zuckers really were taking notes watching that.
No, they were lifting lines. The names are the same, too.
Oh, really?
At one point, Sterling Hayden say, it's a fine time to quit smoking. That was his line originally. And he's very serious. I mean, of course, they're all very serious. But it's great. I mean, you got to see it.
I'll look for it because it was funny. That was 1980 when the Airplane came out.
Oh, that couldn't have been that late.
No,
really?
No, Airplane. Yeah.
Oh, Airplane. Yeah.
Yeah, Airplane. But what I mean was you had all these serious actors like Leslie Nielsen and Lloyd Bridges and Robert Stack, and they were able to get a second wind of their careers doing that stuff.
Well, they were willing to make fun of themselves. I mm-hmm. thought that was very bold. And also that the credit goes to the director for making them feel they can get away with it, I think. That was mm-hmm. they were wonderful. Bridges was sensational.
Yep.
But there was another line, the doctor on the plane. It was legitimate. It was so funny.
I speak jive, no.
You have to find a doctor, but a doctor who didn't eat fish.
Oh, right.
It's an honest to God, anyway.
Hey, let's not forget about your tongue work in Loaded Weapon 1.
That could have been better. Anyway, that's really fun.
A few months ago, I actually found on DVD and bought and watched again Name of the Rose.
Ah, yeah.
Very scary in that, you are.
6 months shooting. Sean was terrific.
And that was the first of two times working with Sean.
Yeah, he's a good guy. At least he was with me, anyway.
That's good.
Yeah, we got along very well. I usually have trouble with anyone, but, you know, you can't get along with everyone.
Mm-mm.
some people are impossible, and we won't even go into who they are. Okay?
I would never ask that. That's not this type. This is not that type of program. Yeah. Just one film fan to another. I just
don't understand why we can't make better films. I really don't. I mean, we've got all these examples for the last, I don't know how many years now. There's no excuse for this crap. You know, there really isn't. There's just no respect for the word, I think, and that's what the problem is. Enough of this slice-of-life action crap. Let's get some art back into it. You know, those wonderful moments when you hear a theme or you see even a few frames of a picture and you go, I want to watch this again. I mm-hmm. can't wait to see this movie again. That's the kind of movie that we can still make. I mean, the idea that you have to spend $200 million for a picture and you still can't make anything but trash, it's absurd.
Do you get a lot of offers from, say, independent directors?
Well, I get them. It's just that even that, they're not very good. I'd love to work for Del Toro, for example.
Ooh.
He and I got along very well on Mimic. Mm-hmm. And we made promises, and I'm from the border of Mexico, and we both speak Spanish, and I just haven't heard from him. So I'm sure when something comes up, he'll call me, because he's a sincere man. But I think he's terrific, and he started out as an independent. What was that wonderful story from Buñuel when he was approached? Do you remember that picture that Woody Allen made where they're standing in line and he talks, they're having an argument?
Annie Hall.
And Marshall McLuhan.
Marshall McLuhan is back behind the plant, If Life Were Only Like This.
Yes, well, he originally wanted Buñuel to do that.
Oh, really?
And it was going to be a different conversation, but it was going to... And he offered, you know, he offers everyone the same money, take it or leave it. But for Buñuel, who said, I can't do it, I'm busy, I'm working, and he said, well, I'll give you such and such amount of money. And he went up to $30,000, and which is outrageous for Woody Allen to offer.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a wealth of money for him to offer. And Buñuel still said, I really can't do it. And then he reflected and said, that was more money than my last film cost me to make. $30,000. Well, he was shooting in Mexico at the time. But
sure.
The point is, it doesn't have to be an expensive film to be a good one. You need a script. You need some good actors. And if you got a good script, you're going to get the actors.
Mm-hmm.
You get me just in a second. But anyhow, you do work for free. I mean, my theater work is practically, I have to underwrite it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Theater doesn't pay.
Oh, we know about underwriting here. This interview,
you know very well what I'm talking about.
This interview is made possible by memberships like yours. Thank you.
Love. I got no complaints. But I really think that, as I said before, I've got a lot of friends in this business, long-lived friends who are just brilliant actors with all these chops, and they can't get arrested. I have to keep reminding them and myself what luck means in our lives. And I'm a very proud actor. I really love my profession, but I'm also full of humility. I'm constantly grateful for these breaks I've been getting. And I'm absolutely sincere when I tell you that.
Well, I'm looking back at even the film work, there doesn't seem to be anything that is embarrassing. And I've seen people with lots of money and lots of acclaim, and they do something that's just... it's just downright silly and not in a complimentary way. And that I don't think it's ever happened with you.
Keep talking. Listen, you're very nice. Thank you so much for this.
There you go. From, my goodness, 3 or 4 years ago. My chat with a
vintage.
Vintage interview with F. Murray Abraham. Of course, he was on the Diane Rehm show this past week. But, of course, Film Sociology got to him first. Mm-hmm. We talked to him first, so there's that.
We were there first.
We were the first.
Yeah, before you did.
And, showed Emma Amadeus this week, and she really liked it, and that makes the world just a better place.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. All right, a couple other titles we're checking out at Heartland Film Festival is the documentary All Me, The Life and Times of Winfried Rembert, which is a very, very moving tale. It's a truly moving picture, of course, about an artist from the South who's getting a native of Georgia who finally gets an art show in his hometown. and how his paintings reflect not just his life, but the Southern African-American experience back in the 50s and 60s. Starry, Starry Night, a feature from Taiwan about a young girl dealing with parents going through a divorce and a new friend at school, and it has elements of Where the Wild Things Are, where some or pieces of origami come to life in more ways than one. So you can go to heartlandfilmfestivals.org for more information. Need to raise a glass for two different reasons. First off, I want to give a laurel and hearty handshake and salute to the Indianapolis International Film Festival's very own Lisa Trifone, who left yesterday to take a new job out west with the Sundance Film Festival. So hopefully she'll remember. She's always got an invite here to Film Sociology. We'll just have to do the chats over the phone. But she's been on the show many, many times and always a really good sport, especially when we play her intro like this.
You are lying. I never hit you. You are tearing me apart, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. So, you know, happy trails and say hi to Robert Redford for us. It wouldn't hurt to ask, really. So. And we're going to move on to a couple of regular segments here. Hopefully next week, the triumphant return of What is Kobe Watching? We will see.
Beck with a vengeance.
But I want to start with the one that has the Chris Lloyd intro.
You're not ready? No, okay. I closed out the thing.
Oh, I see.
Doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
There's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
And as somebody who was a caffeinated young man in the early 80s and 70s, because, as you know, Kobe, 70s.
Different time. 80s, same thing, but different.
You're an idiot. We'll talk about the 80s on another show. But any young man who grew up with Cinemax and other direct cable and VHS and Betamax tapes, you'll know the actress Sylvia Kristel, who was the original and for a lot of people the only Emmanuel back in 1974, who became famous obviously for Emmanuel and its many sequels in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, kind of a fixture of the softcore movement in the 70s and 80s. And this was that brief period where films like Emmanuel, Behind the Green Door, Deep Throat were actually being shown in semi-legitimate theaters, and semi-legitimate people were going to see these. It was just not the creepy guys in raincoats. And Emmanuel, I believe, was... I'll have to double check this, but I thought it was Paramount Pictures picked it up eventually, and of course became an international hit, spawned many, many sequels, most of which, and knockoffs. Sylvia wound up starring in most of those. Now, she did do some other, because of the success of Emmanuel, the Dutch actress wound up appearing in films such as The Fifth Musketeer, she played a flight attendant in the Concorde Airport 79, The Nude Bay A, the Get Smart movie from 1980, and, of course, in 1981, you want to do high art instead of Emmanuel. So what do? A film version of Lady Chatterley's Lover. So anyway, for a lot of young guys, they probably got to see more of Sylvia Kristel than most guys from any other decade. And, well, we just say, Sylvia, thank you. We appreciate your work and the other things. So I'm a pig. Let's move on. Now we're going to move into the archives, and this is the part where certain studios like Paramount and Sony and MGM sell DVDs that you cannot buy in stores. You have to order them online, or as Kobe likes to put it.
Yeah, burn it for like $5.
Well, in this case, it's probably 15 to 20. And because it's October, oh, by the way, next week's show, Sammy Terry is going to be back in studio.
I saw in a local publication that he will be...
was it a non-Nouveau?
No, it was the Nouveau Nouveau.
It was Nouveau. It was the Nouveau Nouveau.
Yes. He's going to be doing a show on Halloween night.
Yes, he is on TTV4.
So scary. It's going to be terrible.
With the film or the experience? Or
you're going to watch it? Because that's what he says.
He's going to be terrible. Yeah.
It's going to be horrible. Because it's scary.
You going to watch it?
I don't know. I don't know. Well... Yeah, I don't know.
You will. Probably. You'll watch a little bit of it.
Yeah, so. I'll watch a little bit of it.
Anyway, so Sammy will be in next week. But so with that, I went back to a 1977 thriller horror film called The Pack. And it's set in, I believe, Nova Scotia, but it's a secluded island. It's a resort island. It lists it this way. 1977, it stars Joe Don Baker. He's the hero, folks. Yeah. And a pack of wild dogs are invading the island and the brand of one-dimensional dumb tourists who are on the island. Of course, all they want to do is drink and fool around and go hunting and fishing, but they're too busy getting eaten by wild dogs. Now, what's interesting about this film...
This is really putting a damper on my plans.
It does put a damper on the resort weekend. The film is directed by Robert Klaus and is co-directed by Fred Weintraub. These are the guys that worked on films like Enter the Dragon, Black Belt Jones, The Ultimate Warrior. That's a Yul Brynner film, not the crazy pro wrestler. So anyway, he moved eventually from working with Robert Klaus, started with Bruce Lee and wound up directing Joe Don Baker. It's kind of a generic film. You would say it would be a dog version of Jaws because of the relentless pack of wild dogs attacking, because that's what attacked people do. They attack. So, and animals. But there's a couple of effective moments, like a woman trapped in a car. And, of course, this was 6 years before Cujo was released. But, yeah, kind of substandard horror movie that Kobe will never watch.
Nope. No, I almost, last time Sammy was here, he gave me a copy of, I think it's Invasion of the Bikini Monsters.
Really?
Yeah. And one of the days last week when Bianca was out recovering from wisdom teeth, I almost threw that in. But
you got a week, dude. He's gonna ask.
Yeah.
You know he'll ask.
Probably should pull that out.
Yeah, I think you should pull it out. So it's work research.
It is.
And apparently, I guess I'm reviving an old feature from the old Abdul in the Morning show. But apparently, I have to put on my corduroy jacket with the elbow pads. And the return once again of Dr. Sosie, film therapist. Now, my number one patient is Abdul.
Is Abdul going to be in here? And
I don't know if he's going to be in next week.
Tell you what, young man.
We will see. This is what needs to happen.
Young man.
But apparently, I have a new client, a new patient, and that would be you, Mr. Slagle, because as we said before, what is Kobe watching? Might be back next week. We'll see. It's possible.
Maybe it'll come back on that Sunday that we do mysteriously.
It could be. It might be. But you watched something that was not your choice.
No.
And when I think we were making fun of Kate Hudson, and you brought up the fact that you watched a Kate Hudson film.
Yep.
And really, it doesn't matter what genre of film Kate Hudson film it is. I know you didn't pick it. But Fair Sweet Bianca selected a Kate Hudson film for the two of you to watch.
It's a good movie.
That's how Fair Sweet Bianca talks, of course.
Yeah.
And it was what?
Skeleton Key.
The Skeleton Key. This is the one where she is going to be a caretaker in an old Southern house, and
Louisiana.
And spooky things are happening.
Yep.
And guess what? Because she's the defenseless female, she's eventually going to be. I hope. Are we spoiling a film that's several years old? She's eventually going to be the next victim.
Yeah.
So.
And then
I know,
take over the reins of being spooky.
Jenna Rollins is in it. Peter Sarsgaard. So and you didn't like it, did you? I didn't like it either. So.
No. I mean, it was in the beginning. It was trying real hard to be real spooky.
Uh-huh. And just not.
And I don't know. I kind of latched onto that. I was like, this didn't do anything. But then I don't know. It was kind of spooky. It got spooky later.
But you finished it.
Yeah.
Okay. But Fair Sweet Bianca knows about your cinematic condition.
Yep.
And she still wanted you to
watch. She has the same cinematic condition. She didn't like scary things either.
Okay.
But she, like you, draws a line between scary, what is scary and what is a thriller and what is suspenseful.
And what is freaky.
Yes. I, however, lump all that in the same thing because
you
get the same response. Yes, I get the same response from watching any of those kind of movies.
I see. So I think, well, of course, I would need to speak with your lovely better half sometime about this situation, but I think you are entitled to selecting the next film.
Oh, I think so, too.
I think maybe True Romance or Glengarry Glen Ross or any other movies I've thrown your way. Anyway, we will continue with that a little bit. So I'm glad to know you survived The Skeleton Key. And
A.K.A. the Kate Hudson underwear movie.
Yeah, there is that. So it's not completely worthless. But no, watch Almost Famous. The best thing Kate Hudson is ever going to do. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we have some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
All right, go to heartlandfilmfestival.org. It's running through October 27th. Hope to see you out there. Blue Star Connection at Beale Street Indie Live Sunday at 4 o'clock. I will be emceeing. Hopefully you will be there as well. The Cool Down tomorrow night at 7 o'clock
right
on
here.
HD2 and WFYI.org. And thank you for supporting WFYI. We will take Big Bird out of the bunker. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Go Tigers!
We go! Good night, Fort Myers.